You're listening to the Moving Fast Tech Podcast. Hello, everyone. I'm Anka Corbin, your host on this Moving Fast Podcast. Joining me today is Kathy Keating, the CTO of the Fortune 500 company TextUs, one of the fastest growing and leading business communications and texting companies. Welcome, Kathy, and thank you for joining me today on the Moving Fast Podcast and sharing your thoughts.
It's great to be here, and thanks for having me on the podcast. It's great to have an opportunity to chat with you.
Kathy, tell us a little bit about yourself and TextUs.
Yeah, great. So I've been in tech for a long time, actually since right out of college. I have a degree in software engineering, when I focused on artificial intelligence. And what was interesting is I was working in artificial intelligence for the first probably 10 years of my career before anyone really knew what it was. And I felt like that, like being on the leading edge of tech, really kind of set the rest of my career. And so always taken on really hard challenges, a lot of firsts in technology. I've helped a lot of companies grow, especially through fast growth. And that's landed me here in my role in TextUs. So this is my third CTO role in my career. And also I've founded twice as well. So I've gotten to see all the different parts of what it takes to take a business from inception through rapid growth. So at TextUs, I run product engineering, and I also run business operations as well. TextUs is all about conversational texting for business. So not marketing, but actually those conversations that you want to have with your customer that are bi-directional. We sit behind a lot of applicant tracking systems, CRM systems, and act as that platform to facilitate that conversation and make sure that your texts get delivered, that your text, that the responses come back to you, and that all the IP that is created within that conversation stays within your company environment rather than sitting on someone's mobile phone.
That's awesome. That's a really, really critical kind of business communication right now too, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Okay, so let me set the stage. The Moving Fast Tech Podcast is a free-flowing format where I will ask you several questions, and then it's up to you where you'd like to take this. So let's get started. The first questions are, so I imagine TextUs has a lot of parallel transactions, like billions of parallel transactions. What are some of your scaling challenges, and what technologies are most helpful with those challenges?
Yeah, so definitely a lot of parallel transactions. You know, people send a lot of texts these days. We sent about, maybe over 30 million texts last month alone, which is actually a relatively small amount if you think of all the texts in the world flying around the world. So the ability to deliver those texts quickly and to ensure that they actually do get delivered through all the platforms that the text has to go through to get out to the carrier and out to your phone. So people expect quick delivery and quick response. A lot of our customers are sending hundreds, sometimes thousands of messages a day to facilitate, you know, conversations within their business. So, you know, you really want that quick response rate. Texting has a pretty quick response rate compared to email. Email's about, you know, takes about 5 days, 4 days for people to respond to emails on average. Texting is actually about 90 minutes, right? So when I send that text, I'm expecting a response back, and the response rates are much higher than email as well. So, lots of parallel transactions, got to get them out quick. And so it's really complex when you think about all the downstream vendors as well. And our goal is really high deliverability and zero loss. So if a message doesn't go through, we have to put it on the queue again and make sure that it gets back out there. So we have a pretty sophisticated queuing and retry process. Obviously, we have a lot of legal rules and regulations as well. If you send texts too fast, those texts can get blocked by the carrier, and your number can get blocked by the carrier. So we have a pretty sophisticated algorithm for really throttling and limiting how fast you can send texts as well. It's also super important for us to auto scale. So as you can imagine, everyone comes into work for day, they send all their messages during the day, but there's very little messages that happen at night. So it's really important for our environment as a whole to be able to surge to handle the load during the day and really scale back at night and on weekends when there's much lower load. So our environment is pretty sophisticated and relatively automated in that regard.
Did you build, you know, how much is built and how much is partner as far as kind of the sophisticated process that you have put together?
Yeah, so the top texting vendors like Twilio is one of our vendors that facilitates the interface to the carrier to send each message and to receive messages back. So they act as our gateway to that. We have a couple other vendors as well in that space, depending on the type of phone number. You know, I think of them as the platform under the platform, right? They facilitate the individual messages, but where we orchestrate everything on top of that, we tie the conversations together. As conversations happen, we enrich the data along the way to understand, like, what is your response rate? Are people happy? Are they sad? We facilitate all the opt-out, you know, rules and regulations. And we also facilitate all the information, pushing information back into the applicant tracking and CRM systems as well.
So really lots of vendors. Yeah. Like this kind of net, like maze of things that are connected to work together. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I always talk about our product as, you know, the hub within the ecosystem. You know, big companies, they want to work in their own CRM system. They want to work in their own applicant tracking system. They don't want to work in like 20 different products to achieve their job, right? And so it's really important for us to be that foundation behind those products of where people want to do their daily job.
That makes a lot of sense. I imagine with texting, delivery is probably one of the most critical pieces of that. What technologies and systems have you found to really help with text deliverability?
Yeah, so a lot of people think of deliverability, especially us as engineers, software engineers, we think of deliverability as just, is the API up and, you know, did I get a proper response code to say you received it? But when you think about all those vendors strung together, so like a Twilio has to go out to Verizon, Verizon has to say it was delivered, Verizon has to let Twilio know, right? So there's like complexity in how those messages and responses come back. And but then there's a lot of gray area in there because deliverability, each one of those vendors actually has their own proprietary algorithms to determine if the messages you're sending are spam, right? Because there's all these consumer protection rules and regulations that, you know, might get a message you send to be blocked, right? Certain words you use, certain the rate at which a number is sending messages. And each vendor has their own proprietary algorithms. They're not going to tell you. Verizon's not going to tell you when they mark something as spam why they did. Mm-hmm. And of course, we have algorithms as well on our side to ensure the highest deliverability based on the patterns that we see coming from like the, you know, those vendors in the world. So, and our algorithms change over time as the use of texting changes. So we do certain things like help you craft a great message. We tell you when words you're using might be considered spam. We, you know, we talk to you about the length of the message. So, you know, our job is to also consult you to send the best message that you can, not just to get it delivered, but also to get a response.
That's interesting. So you have a huge technical challenge, but I hadn't realized how big of a regulatory challenge you have to work through with partner-facing marketing guidelines. You have some very complex layers to make sure all of it works together.
Yep, and it works, you know, different countries, different states have different rules and regulations, and and a lot of that doesn't actually get clarified until it actually gets into the court system and the court starts to rule based on interpretation of some of this law. So it's fascinating to have to learn and stay abreast of everything that's going on in the space.
I imagine so. So as a CTO, what sort of new technology are you watching closely now and even considering switching to? Because one of the things we focus on in this podcast is what is moving fast technology and what's important to pay attention to and what's not. Now, of course, this is all a matter of one's perspective and interpretation too.
Yeah, so I have lots of thoughts on technology and what's new. And, you know, I'll go back to like AI. I worked in AI, you know, really early on in my career. And so machine learning and AI is super important to me and how we can continue to leverage and grow that within our ecosystem to be better. You know, I think that there's ways that you can leverage that. You know, I see a lot of developers going off and, hey, I can build my own model versus leveraging existing models that are out there today to get yourself, you know, a large part of the way there. And I really think of that concept as like commodity software versus what's my strategic IP, right? And a lot of what I do to help me move fast is to ruthlessly decide what is commodity software that I can get from another vendor who that's strategic for them, right? But if I decided to build that in-house and spend my development effort, am I making the most strategic decision about that technology choice if I quote in-house something versus using somebody else's product? So, you know, I do a lot of, I think, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's really cool around how we work as an ecosystem to come together as companies to build out a platform, and how we can leverage each other's strengths to get all of us to where we need faster. So things like DevOps and all the products that come that you can leverage, SaaS products, you know, to make DevOps really fly. You know, then there's the SEC DevOps, like bringing in information security into the DevOps equation and the tools that we can bring in for that. You know, those aren't my core IP. So to me, I don't want to go build those from scratch. I want to partner with the people who are the best at that. Things like I'm really interested in the direction this idea of platform as a service like Heroku, like what direction that's going to take. You know, I have a philosophy that I shouldn't be custom crafting my internal environment, my hosting environment, because I'm not an expert at that. I'm expert at my application and my code, but I'm not an expert at networks and AWS and Google and how do you spin up the cloud. But a lot of these platforms as a service are experts at that. And so it'll be really interesting to see how that kind of moves forward in the ecosystem, is to let the experts be the experts at what they are and bring the experts into your ecosystem when you can. So a little different look at which technologies to look at.
Right. No, I totally agree. I think that's a really interesting and fast, kind of moving fast sort of approach to development, right?
Yeah, and I think InfoSec is like one of the most untapped areas right now. I think I see a lot of startups kind of saying, oh, I'll get to information security later, or, you know, I'm not big enough to be a threat. And, you know, that is some of the area that is most important to bake in from the beginning, because, you know, once something goes wrong, you know, fixing it is so much harder. And so, like, if I were starting out, like, I would look at bringing, you know, making sure I'm doing the right things from that perspective. And I think it's an untapped, you know, underutilized market right now.
That makes a lot of sense. Has COVID-19 impacted what technology you're using or looking at?
So COVID hasn't really affected the technology we're using, but it has affected the use of our platform. So when everyone went remote, all of a sudden you didn't have those hallway conversations. We had CIOs calling us who said, like, I had to furlough my sales team and all their leads are on their personal phones, right? And so they no longer had that IP of the conversation where they could redirect those conversations to, you know, let's say a smaller staff. And so, you know, hindsight is 2020, you know, you have to invest in the infrastructure that retains your IP before the disaster happens. And so I don't think many companies, you know, in their disaster recovery planning assumed that they would move to fully remote within a week, right? Okay. And so, you know, backpedaling and trying to adapt to that has been really fascinating to see that we've had a large uptick in the number of texts that are going out of our platform, especially in the staffing verticals. So we might see a downgrade in, like, let's say permanent positions, but an upgrade in temp positions on our platform in that particular vertical. And so now that there's that, not this face-to-face experience, you know, people are looking for tools like texting to be able to bridge that gap.
That makes sense. Interesting. Now, obviously, your team is fully remote right now, I would imagine. But strategically, you know, I've had a lot of these conversations with different CTOs around, you know, what's the right configuration at the right point in your business? Like, how do you build velocity and reduce risk? What does all in-house versus hybrid in-house outsource? Like, what's that right combination? And I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. One, how your team is currently organized, and then, like, what does ideal look like for you?
Yeah, so I have my personal ideas here, and a lot of what I've seen at a lot of different companies as well. It was very interesting for me because I started this role at TextUs on the first day of lockdown in Boulder. And so, you know, I literally have not met most of the people face-to-face at my company. And so I started fully remote with a company that was partially remote to begin with, right? So even though we had a corporate office, we have people scattered all over the country, or actually the world, on the team. And so the team was already working probably 50-ish percent remote. So it was relatively easy for us to move fully remote. But in fully remote, you still want to have the personal interaction with people. So we do things like video on for most meetings. You know, we were relatively lucky going fully remote because we don't have an internal corporate network. Everything we do is fully virtualized. You know, we're that kind of that zero trust. Everything is a SaaS-based platform. So for us, we didn't have to worry about, like, setting up VPN to get into a corporate network so you could get to a machine, right? And so I think, you know, as we go forward, that's going to be really important for companies to understand as they go forward into whatever the next, even if you come back into the office, there will be another time again where we have to go more fully remote and to really plan for those scenarios within your environment. So they are already essentially a remote first company in how you run your network, how you run your teams. I think for us, you know, we do, my team directly, I am, you know, all the way from the East Coast to Colorado. I have people scattered throughout the United States. So for me, you know, we'll probably stay mostly remote and maybe go to more of a quarterly get together when and if we can. But we'll always continue to have the remote first environment for our team. And that means even if we're sitting together, and there's some people remote, we're always on Zoom for everyone. We're always using Google Docs and really coming from that remote first mentality.
No, I think I hadn't really heard that put that way with the remote first, but that makes so much sense that that's your plan A, and everything works already in that. And then plan B, which may be optimal, is that hybrid or whatever, but you can always function at top level because you're remote first. So,
and then if you're in the office together, you know, and one person is still remote, you can still operate remote first, even though most of you might be sitting around a table. And so, you know, I think the companies that are most effective that I've heard from that to adapt to this situation were the ones that were already mostly operating in that remote first perspective.
Very, very interesting. I love that word. I think I'm going to use that. Hope that's okay.
Sure. I didn't coin it. Somebody else did.
All right. Well, but it works. It's really perfect for this. And it's a perspective that makes so much sense. You know, as a CTO, and this is a little bit more of a higher level discussion, is in general, what do you see as some of the top challenges in the short term and the long term to be aware of? or to keep an eye on for engineering leaders and teams, right? So kind of like looking forward next few years, next 5 years, next 10 years, like there's some really big headwinds and some really big things coming up. What do you see as those biggest challenges from your perspective?
Yeah, I kind of touched on part of this a little earlier where I was talking about commodity and making the right decisions, build versus buy. I think, you know, things are just getting faster and faster. Things are getting harder and harder. And I think, you know, as engineers, we're really good at making work for ourselves that isn't necessarily strategic and great for the business. We love building things, so we build first. And we really don't think about, you know, what makes sense for the business and where is the best use of our time as engineers within the business, furthering the success of the business. And so I've been talking to a lot of leaders who are really struggling with like the massive amount of tech debt around all those little build it myself projects that are now weighing down the company and not letting the company be as strategic as they could be in a downturn or a reduced, you know, revenue situation we're in right now for a lot of companies. And so as engineers, we have to be ruthless in saying, hey, you know, this other company does this better, and here's how I think we might be able to integrate them into our ecosystem. I think the other thing that long-term, you know, challenges is really a lot of us in engineering, we love to talk about how to do something and we want clear requirements, just tell me what I have to build. And we don't always understand why we're building what we're building. And I think as engineering leaders, we have to bring more of the why into what we're doing. We have to connect our engineers closer to the customer and bringing more into view the value that we're producing for those customers, how we're solving the problems, telling those stories better. Because I don't know, I just, in my world, every time I've had a team that was really inspired about the stories from the customers, that team thrived and the product that we built was amazing and it helped the team grow. And when I came into situations where engineers were disconnected from the why and didn't understand the why, those teams struggled, you know, and growth wasn't there. And, you know, I just feel like as engineering leaders, we need to be better at bringing the why, inspire our teams, mm-hmm. and inspire our teams with those stories.
Connecting them much deeper into the business versus just being the executors, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you mentor a lot of startups, I know, because we're friends and we do some of these things together. And we always run into each other, which is awesome. And as a global mentor for, you know, top accelerators like Techstars and others, what's the advice that you give new tech teams to launch fast and then scale well?
Yeah, so I think the biggest advice I give startups is to ruthlessly prioritize your work. You're going to have hundreds of things as a small company that you want to achieve, and you're only going to be able to do 10 of the 100. Which 10 of those are the most strategic, and how are you determining what's the most strategic? And I think this is one of the hardest things for small startups to figure out, how to create the process of how to do strategic decision making, right? How do you take those 100? How do you evaluate what's most important? Are you picking the features that someone's yelling the loudest for, or are you picking the ones that are driving the most revenue? And how do you balance those two extremes? And so I'd say probably more than half of my coaching is really around that product engineering process, the road mapping, what is your product strategy to begin with? And how do you build a framework that helps you prioritize? For me, I use what's called a weighted matrix, which is a pretty complicated way to prioritize. But, you know, at this point, I have thousands of features in my backlog. But I do teach a scaled down version of that startups can utilize. I think the next thing is really about, it's okay to not be perfect. I see a lot of startups iterate and iterate internally on something and not release it because it's not perfect. And you know, the advice I give is like, if it's 70% there, the most important thing you could do is get it in your hands of your customers, because your customers are going to give you better feedback than you'll ever get from yourself. So.
Well, all of that is really, really great advice. So Kathy, I want to thank you so very much for just sharing your insights. That was super interesting. And thank you for being here and this candid discussion and just sharing your thoughts with us on the Moving Fast Tech Podcast. It was really great to have you as our guest today.
It's been great to be here. And thanks for inviting me. It's always wonderful talking to you.
I love that too. So to our listeners, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast channel and join us next time for another Moving Fast Tech Podcast, so you can hear from industry leaders about the latest technology, how they're preparing their company for the future, and some challenges to consider. Thanks for joining us today.